When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Men, women, and children will die by the thousands if we do nothing.
Let them die. We got our own to worry about. Less enemies for us.
Fewer. What?
Hey, everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm David.
And I'm Grace.
This is Game of Microphones, episode 9. And we are halfway through season 5.
Oh, I can't believe it.
It goes by so fast.
I know.
I mean, it's so dense, too. So this show's weird because it's so dense, but there's so many different storylines going along that it can be really dense and still feel like it takes a while for things to happen.
Yeah, totally. I thought this was a bit more of a slower paced episode, but still a lot happened.
Yep, there was a lot of dialogue in this episode, but I can't believe we're 5 seasons into this show. It seriously seems like it just started.
I know, and it really makes me sad that they, if it's true, that they really want to wrap it up on season 7 and we didn't start our podcast until now.
Late to the game.
It's kind of a bummer, but yeah, I'm liking it a lot. Well, let's get right into it. So we'll do our top 5 highlights. This week it's Game of Thrones season 5, episode 5, Kill the Boy, which I really like that title.
Great title.
Mm-hmm. And I liked what it ended up representing too. It wasn't an actual boy dying, which you wouldn't put past Game of Thrones.
Yeah, which is pretty funny because in just about every other episode of the show, they have killed the boy. Killed the boy. They could have called this episode "Don't Kill the Boy."
I was worried
it was going to be like a Tommen episode or something.
Yeah.
Oh no! There's like, another king.
Who are all the boys? Bran, Tommen. Okay, so what did you guys think in general?
I thought it was good. I want to say that it was probably one of my top 3. I liked it a lot better than last week's episode. That's for sure.
So it wasn't a problem for you that it was slower?
No. Mm-mm.
David?
I really enjoyed it. And I don't mind slow. One of my complaints that you may hear a couple times tonight and maybe heard last week is that in some storylines, I feel like they're moving too fast.
Right.
Like they're in a hurry. And so I love it when they take some time for dialogue and character development, plot development. And I don't know if Grace is going to give us a rating, but I'll go ahead and give you my rating, which is I gave this episode 4.55 charred dragon meals.
Which could be split in half, all of them.
Yes, they could. All storylines compelling. I mean, lots of our longtime favorite characters, like Jon Snow and Tyrion. Some great imagery, which we'll talk about more, I'm sure, when we get into our mm-hmm. top 5. I thought it was a really good episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think slow-paced things can be really great. And I also like varied pacing, which Game of Thrones is great at. Some episodes are just nonstop, and then other times we take a little time to reflect. Just thinking of slow things, recently I saw 2 movies. I saw Ex Machina, which you guys heard me talk about. That's pretty slow, but very tense and just engaging. And then we saw Maggie, which if you want to hear us talk about that, you can listen to our Walking Dead cast, but I wouldn't bother watching the movie first.
That was a movie that could be described as not having varied pacing.
No, it was like they just trained the camera on a blade of grass for about 5 seconds.
Like, and then slowed the film down.
That was the exciting part. Okay, so I also loved it. I thought it was a really good episode. Game of Thrones is a show where I could probably look back and say, I don't think there's ever been an episode where I was like, man, I was really disappointed in that. You know, I mean, there's been things about certain episodes that I haven't liked, but there hasn't been a dud in the bunch as far as I can remember. And this one was no exception. I thought there was a lot going on. It was really engaging, good movement on the plot on a few fronts. And there's a few things that I'm worried about as far as the direction of the show, but only just slightly, but we'll get into that later on. But let's go ahead and start with our top five. So Grace, why don't you go first?
Okay, my number five is Danny's Decisions. And I'm really of two minds on Danny with this episode. You know, one part of me is so glad that she's finally making decisions on her own again, even if I kind of wonder if they're wise decisions. And then part of me keeps thinking that she needs to quit wasting time in Marine and finally cross the narrow sea. Mm-hmm. And then I'm back to thinking that Marine is where she needs to be for the time being, so that she can learn how to rule before she tries to sit on the Iron Throne. So I think just the, in general, the Danny storyline, I think I've said this before, it's not one of the most engaging ones for me at this time. So I was glad to be like totally on board with this. Just even if I, you know, didn't always agree with her, it had me engaged for a change, I think.
It was cool that she, it was like, okay, she's taking charge. She's doing something different. Also, she's doing something that I think a lot of us have kind of thought she should have done a long time ago, which is start those fights again.
Sure.
But I thought it was interesting that Sam, it was reading that message to Maester Aemon that it said Daenerys refused to leave Slaver's Bay until the freedom of the former slaves is secure. I didn't really put that together before, but maybe that's her milestone that she wants to achieve before she does move on.
Yes. Yeah. That's why she hasn't left.
Well, that was good to hear, because I was sort of wondering, what, you know, when are you going to know when it's time? And even that's sort of a vague, how are you really going to know when they're secure? But they obviously aren't yet, so.
Right.
I was wondering, too, and I probably should know this, but I never feel ashamed for not knowing something in Game of Thrones. It's so complicated. Who was that letter coming from? Like, who was the source of that information? Do we know?
I was wondering that myself, and I just presume that because he's the other Targaryen, that maybe he has someone sending him news.
Gotcha.
I just assumed it was Varys. He's everywhere sending messages.
Oh, that's a good point. It absolutely could be him, and he's involved with her. But originally, you would have figured it was either Jorah or Ser Barristan, who might be passing along information, but both of them are out of the picture.
Right. And I wonder about Varys. Is he going to figure in, or is he like, okay, we're done with him now?
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as Tyrion was off, we haven't seen Varys, so I'm not sure where he is.
As far as Daenerys goes, I thought it was interesting that she just was like, okay, you're going to be my husband now. You know, that's it. I thought that was such a shock. I was like, holy shit, I didn't expect that. I think you guys probably did, but I didn't. And I thought it was interesting. And I wonder if she knows whether or not he actually has a wife. You'd think that he would if he's the leader of his house, but I presume he doesn't, and she knows that.
Yeah, and I'm sure going to talk about this in book talk, because that was one of many, many interesting differences between how things were handled.
Oh, okay.
In the book and the show.
It's interesting because I like that guy. I like how he's playing the role, but I don't really see any chemistry between them. And I guess it doesn't really matter if it's a political marriage, but I hope they do get married, and I want to see, you know, how that moves forward and what their relationship is like.
She does have an interesting way of proposing that has a good chance of getting a yes, that throw you in prison and threaten you with dragon breath.
Yeah, she had some great lines in this one, too. But yeah, I especially like the one when she was talking to Miss Andy. You know, if I give everyone what they deserve, I'll have no one left to rule. I kind of feel like that around my house sometimes with my own children.
I know. And on this show, it sort of rings true. She might have to do herself in at the end there.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, David.
My number five is Grayscale. And we saw Grayscale a little bit earlier in an episode or two, but I think it's, again, George R. R. Martin's originally, and now the showrunners, they're amazing talent for taking something that we sort of know, like leprosy maybe, and just making it more interesting and compelling.
amping it up, kind of.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love the stone men. I love the way they looked. They were really menacing. I have to say, with apologies to The Walking Dead, there are arguably three kinds of zombies now in Game of Thrones that might be cooler than the zombies in The Walking Dead, which are also great.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, I mean, if they touch you, you're kind of a goner.
Yeah, but so, slowly.
Right. Excruciatingly slowly. Right,
it's not, as quick of a death as if, you know, a Walking Dead zombie.
The weight with which they landed in the water and on the ship and how crazy they were, I just loved it.
Yeah, and that first one that jumped off the rock, and I felt just like Tyrion, like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, and missed them, the first one.
Yeah. And
landed in the water.
Eric, a.k.a. Mr. Blog, sent out this screenshot of when Tyrion and Jorah were heading into, what is it, Valyria? And you could see he had circled, or somebody had circled, like 12 different stone men who were kind of hiding in the darkness up above in different crevices of the ruins.
That was totally creepy.
It was really creepy.
They blend in with the stonework.
Yeah. So, you know, you really didn't notice that, but I didn't go back and look, but I want to go back and look and see.
I was glad they finally went somewhere with the stone men and the grayscale plot, because they kept mentioning it. I'm like, what are they going to do with this? You know, when is this going to be bigger? Because you know it has to be bigger because they keep bringing it up. But the scene was great. It was so claustrophobic. And I like how Tyrion's hands, how they were like tied up during battle. That kind of was like a parallel back to that first fight way back after Catelyn had arrested him. Remember when they were on the road to the Eyrie and he was like tied in the battle with his hands tied, but this was even worse because they're on this tiny boat.
And you can't be touched.
And you can't be touched at all. Yeah.
It also made me wonder, another little oblique reference that this show is so good at, these throwaway references that, you know, you wonder, is this going to turn into more of a story or is it just an aside, was in the last episode, Stannis talking to his daughter, the princess, and saying, you had grayscale and they wanted me to send you away to this island where the stone men are, but I gathered all the healers in the land together and they healed you. And now I'm kind of wondering, who were these healers and that knew how to heal this disease?
Yeah. And can Jorah get access to them? It doesn't seem like it.
Yes. Seems unlikely, but
money.
But I love that. I mean, that scene I wasn't on the podcast last week, but that scene was so touching between Stannis and his daughter. And it really got to me. And those things like father, daughter, or any parent child scenes really get to me. And I didn't even question, oh, is this sort of signifying that something's going to be up with that disease? I just thought this is such a great character scene. And then the fact that it actually, now I know, well, they probably wanted it to be a good character scene, but it was also there to remind us about grayscale. And so it functioned on two levels. And I just thought it was great.
Well, and the thing is that it was brought up twice that episode because Gilly, or was it that episode or the episode before when Gilly and Shireen were talking about it too. So it's like, they kept mentioning it. I'm like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, that's true, man. They mentioned it twice. So that sort of clued you in like, huh, they're kind of hitting on this. Maybe it signifies something, but that scene was great too. Just sort of,
it was
learning about what she went through with her sisters and everything.
Yeah, and how it can affect their brain and turn them into animals.
Yeah. And then, you know, they sent them off. They send them off to Valyria, and it's sort of, I agreed with Tyrion, who said it would be kinder to put daggers in their hearts and be done with it. It's like, maybe you should just kill them off.
Yeah, it reminded me, you know, David mentioning leprosy, but that reminded me of a book I read about, and I can't remember, the island in Hawaii. But
yeah, I think it's Molokai.
Island where they sent all the lepers. Yeah, Molokai. And the book, I read that book, and it was, you know, very much the same, where people didn't know much about how the disease was spread or how to stop it. And they send these people away for years. You know, some of them live a lifetime almost with leprosy.
Yeah, maybe the stone men are happy just sort of climbing around in the ruins, creeping people out.
Maybe.
Okay, my number five is John's plans with the wildlings. He wants to go up, gather them all, and bring them back on Stannis's ships, have them come through the gate and settle in the lands, and I presume help if the walkers attack. And I think Stannis probably wants their help if, you know, he's lending them his ships. I assume he's going to want something in return. So what do you guys think of that plan?
I think it's a wonderful plan, and I think it needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Sorry, a necessary...
David talking.
No, I agree, a necessary plan, but it seems like it has a lot of moving parts where things could go wrong.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. Jon Snow is my hero for suggesting that, and I could see where it would be really hard based on the history, you know, and it makes you think of tense situations in our current world situation, you know, and I wish that people could do the same thing and just let go of the past and forgive each other for everyone's sake, but it's easier said than done. And it seems almost impossible. Like I feel like it's such a noble thing to do, and maybe in a TV show it could work, but in Game of Thrones, maybe not, you know, but I'm glad he did it. And, I just think it's really commendable. I mean, another thing about this show though, is when we see people who are honorable, they end up dying. So when John does this kind of thing, it's halfway makes me think, oh, is he going to get his throat slit in the next episode? But then again, I have this feeling that Jon Snow is here to stay for a while and is going to play a bigger role in things. But you just never know. I mean, I almost wish you guys hadn't read the books and didn't know stuff ahead of time, because as I'm saying all this, I think you guys are like, we do know.
No, I mean, you have to remember how close we are this season to catching up. So there are some things we don't know, even though you think we might know.
Yeah.
But with John, I think his words were so wise. And what really hit home for me is when he's like, we can learn to live with wildlings, or we can add them to the army of the dead.
Right.
And that's true. I mean, that is just giving the other team all these players if you do not accept them, you know, within your own ranks. And not only do they need them to help fight off the White Walkers and all that, but if they don't, the other team's going to take them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's being both honorable and
pragmatic. Yeah, that's right.
And mm-hmm. because he spent so much time with them, he's probably the only person that could forge such an alliance, if it is possible to forge such an alliance, which is not clear.
Right. But I thought it was great when he said, you're going to have to come with me. Cause I was like, ooh, that's an exciting prospect to watch. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, because every time they go north of the wall, some good stuff goes on.
you know, there's got to be some action. And, you know, like you said, it's not easy. Things will probably go wrong. But in that talk with Tormund, what I really like, and, you know, is that you said he's pragmatic, but he also does, I think, believe what he's saying and believes in the free folk and believes that they're, you know, they're humans and all that. But, you know, when he said, you belong to the realms of men, all of you. I mean, I thought that was really important and something that he caught that everybody has been missing for thousands of years. And, and I don't know. And like you said, hopefully they can make peace, but this is Game of Thrones after all.
I mean, we can't do it now here either.
Right.
So. Right. I know.
Right. One thing I wondered about in this show, certainly, you know, you forgive them a little bit on time and timing of the story because it's so complex. But it was the season finale. I don't even remember which season now, when the army of the undead was setting out, you know, for the south.
And Sam sees them and everything.
Well, yeah, with the king, really slow, the king on the horse. And that's what I was going to say. It's like, are they going to get here at any point? They must be going really slowly, or they started really far north.
Maybe they have to wait till winter comes.
Yeah.
So they can go that far south.
And so they just like dug a hole or something and they're hibernating for a little while.
I think that's the best singing theory. Kumbaya. They probably have to wait. Yeah, they probably have to wait.
But, you know, now they've been saying winter's coming for a long time. But now I notice people are starting to say, you know, winter's almost upon us. It's going to come any day now. We really mean it this time.
Stannis actually seems a little worried now.
I mean, he wanted to leave for Winterfell because he's afraid that winter will be coming any day now, it seemed like.
Exactly.
It will be a great point in the show when they say, All right, winter is
winter's
here.
Winter's here. Yay!
Yeah.
I can't
Spring
wait.
Is coming.
Yeah. I thought there was a little bit of thematic resonance between the soul situation with the Wildlings and the Night's Watch and Tyrion and Jorah, because again, we have two, it's instead of groups, it's two people. We know and like both of them, but because of the situation they're in, at least at first, Jorah doesn't like Tyrion and is very abusive. But we see that if they even just spend a little time together and they're in peril together, that they sort of started bonding. And we'll talk about that more. I don't want to get too much into it, but it just felt like a similar situation where if people just would stop fighting each other and get to know each other, then they might realize that they can be friends. Let's go into the next one. Grace.
Okay. My number four is just a small thing, but it was Stannis and Sam's interaction. It was something I really enjoyed. You know, Stannis was surprised when he set his eyes on Sam, and he talked about what a great fighter Sam's father was. But then he acknowledged Sam's gift when he told him to keep on reading. Keep reading, Samwell Tarly. And, you know, that just was so important. It just touched my heart, and I loved it because Sam is so relatable and such a good guy, and unappreciated for so much of his life. So it's nice to see that as out of place as he seemed when he first came to Castle Black, how he really is finding his little niche and people are noticing his gifts for a change instead of, you know, the things where he places where he's lacking. So that touched me.
Yeah, I love that, that touched you. And I agree with you. And not only are they respecting him for, well, I don't know if it's because of this, but I've noticed this season that he'll, like when people were sort of, I forget, Jon Snow was talking and some people would speak out against him and he'd be like, hey, pipe down. And, you know, Sam would say that and nobody would go and beat the shit out of him or anything. They were just like, okay. So yeah, he's obviously got some respect
being
now.
Being respected, yeah.
Yep. And meanwhile, Stannis, who really didn't get off to a great start. I mean, he was birthing shadow babies and burning his guys at the stake and all this stuff. I never thought he'd become a sympathetic character, but you're starting to root for the guy a little bit.
I totally love him right now.
Yeah, he's a little bit more sympathetic.
They're doing a good job with him lately.
Yeah.
He's great. And he seemed kind of like a wet noodle before, and now he's a badass and a real man. Another thing about that, Sam told Stannis that he read that the children of the forest used to hunt with dragonglass. That was the only thing he found out so far. So I looked it up, and you guys probably already knew this, but the children of the forest are an ancient race believed to have inhabited Westeros before the first men came 12,000 years before the current time. They were humanoid, but not human, and they look like children and believed to be extinct. But we saw them in the last episode of season 4 when one of them saved Bran and Mira and Hodor from the Wights, and then a whole bunch of them were in the cave with the three-eyed raven. So I didn't remember that, but when I looked it up, I was like, oh yeah, that's who he's talking about. Yeah.
Right. And it's been a long time since we've heard or seen any of that story. So that's out there waiting for us.
Well, I heard they're not having Bran at all this season.
I heard it was Hodor that we weren't seeing but we might see Bran.
Oh really?
Who knows?
Oh
yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure though, because I don't go looking for spoilers. So I'm not sure.
David?
My number four in this episode is Ramsay Bolton, the former Ramsay Snow. He's really a charmer, isn't he? maybe the biggest role I would say he's had in an episode so far. He's just delightfully kooky, twisted, sociopathic, scary. It's a beautiful acting job. I wasn't really sure why Roose Bolton didn't rein him in a little bit at dinner. He kind of chided him afterwards, and he was misbehaving, but I'm just enjoying Ramsay and his crazy
antics. I think he did rein him in
down
because
a huge peg.
Yeah, I think Roose turning the tables on Ramsay was one of mine, and I I love that dinner scene as a whole. It was great, but I really really enjoyed, not as much as Sansa maybe, but when Roose was putting Ramsay in his place and torturing him a bit with the news about that unborn half brother of his, you know, Ramsay was getting way too cocky, and you know, so So Roose brought that up to, I think, to put him kind of back in his place.
No, and yeah, of course, you're both absolutely right. He did let him go through the whole charade, and then he did knock him down after that.
At first, I thought, and I still do, I thought that was really masterful to make him feel so insecure and then ask him for help in defeating Stannis because you know he's going to want to prove himself now.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like, well, wouldn't he want to do that anyway? Like, you'd think if he thought his whole way of life was in danger and his family could be destroyed, that he'd be right there fighting by his side no matter what.
And what else is he going to do?
Yeah. But it was still great to watch. And I loved that, you know, you said, Grace, that they were kind of, that he's quirky and stuff. Or David, I think you said that. Anyways, I love that he acknowledged, she said, the people here are strange, Sansa did. And he's like, yeah, that's right.
Very strange.
Very strange. I wonder about him. Like, it's interesting to me, his relationship with Miranda. You know, I believe that she actually is jealous and that she is interested in him, which makes me think that if he wants to, he can be, if not nice, at least engaging to people, and that as long as he's not bored with you, maybe he'll be loyal to you in a way, you know? And I wondered with the whole Reek thing, like he told him to apologize to Sansa for killing her brothers. And it seemed so creepy and like he was needling her or something. But actually, when you think about it, you'd want your new fiance to have the killer of your brothers apologize to you for that. If that's, you know.
Oh, but I think he was totally needling her. I think he set up the whole thing with Sansa, with Miranda showing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think that whole thing was a setup just for fun.
Okay. I wondered why she would do that on her own, but it makes more sense that he put her up to it.
That's how I took it. As far as Miranda goes, I think she likes the sick side of Ramsay. She gets off on that. She's attracted to that in a sick way. And I do think her jealousy is legitimate because, you know, he's hers, she's his, and she, as sick as we might think it is, you know, she doesn't want it any differently.
Another reading of that, I agree with you. I think that's it too. But the only thing that gave me a little doubt is when at the very end of their scene upstairs, he turned her around and started to, you know, do his thing. And she didn't really look like she was that into it at that point. And that made me wonder, oh, maybe this whole thing is just because she thinks that unless she is either his wife or his mistress, that she's going to be dead. And that is kind of true. That's what he told her, you know, you're mine. And unless you bore me, you know, basically things are going to be okay. So, and I think she is interested in him, but it is possible that she's just sort of trapped now. And the only way to keep from dying is by being an exciting mistress.
And a common theme in Game of Thrones, major power imbalance in a relationship. And that is true here.
Yeah.
She's also probably still mad and maybe she's scheming and planning right then too. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. I think she's a definite threat.
Yeah. I mean, when she took Sansa into the kennel, I thought, oh crap, she's going to kill her or something out of jealousy. And then she ended up showing her Theon. And I was sort of like, why is she just needling her or what's the point? I still don't really quite understand. I mean, even if Ramsay put her up to it, why? Why did he want to do that? Just to show her that he's so powerful and has dominion over this guy that was once Sansa's sort of brother. I guess that could be it, huh? Just to flex his muscle.
It could be.
I think he finds it entertaining.
Yeah, or it could honestly be his way of thinking, this is how you, you know, do something nice for your fiance.
Yeah, I honestly believe that could be it. All right, so my number four is, I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. Is Jon Snow a Targaryen? So this theory is like all over the net, and I felt like we should talk about it. So, not this episode so much, but recently they've mentioned Rhaegar Targaryen a couple of times, and also Ned Stark's sister Lyanna. They met Littlefinger and Sansa were talking about how there was this tournament, and Rhaegar rode right past his wife to crown Lyanna Queen of Love and Beauty. And then later the story is that he kidnapped and raped her. Although I've heard that that might just be speculation, but anyways, he did kidnap her. And then Davos mentioned something about Ned Stark having been with a whore, and Stannis said that that wasn't his way. So the implication is that maybe Lyanna and Rhaegar had Jon Snow, and Ned Stark decided to take care of him and not tell anyone. Another hint towards that is that apparently Melisandre can only make those shadow babies with those of King's blood, and she was really playing up to Jon Snow wanting to make one with him last episode. So it and she seems to know things about him. So that's sort of a hint. Also, Catelyn Stark said that nothing she said could persuade Ned to send Jon away early on. So it makes sense that he might want to protect his sister's son. And then just the overarching thing is that, especially at first in the show, I didn't understand why there was so much focus on him. And so it might make sense that, you know, if he's of King's blood, that he would be a big focus character. Although lately, just now that he's become the leader of the Night's Watch, his story is big enough to merit that kind of focus, even if this isn't what I'm saying isn't the case. And then the last thing is, I thought it was really funny when Maester Aemon said this episode, he said, "A Targaryen alone in the world is a terrible thing." And then Jon Snow walked in right after that. It reminded me of, like, back on Laverne and Shirley, they'd say something like, "Well, I can't think of anything more disgusting than that." And then Lenny and Squiggy would pop in, "Hello." So who knows? I'm curious what you guys think about that.
I agree. I mean, I don't know the answers to this, but any more than you do, but I agree. And more than now that we've seen it on the show, I think they're telling, I thought they basically told us that, yeah, that's what it is. Just about.
You think so, yeah.
In the show.
Yeah, to me, it's uncertain. It's certainly it's very plausible, and there have been some clues in that direction, but this show's pretty good at misdirection, too.
Right, yeah.
And they can surprise you.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know.
I mean, he doesn't have blonde hair. For what it's worth.
If he was a Targaryen, he could marry Daenerys, because that's sort of a Targaryen tradition, although she may have another husband by then.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I thought was interesting, both in this instance and also earlier when Melisandre brought it up about the King's blood, is that this King's blood seems to be a very malleable commodity. I mean, there's a lot of people claiming thrones, and you know, Gendry was just one of many of one king's bastards, and that king just got to be king, not by any right, really, but he just took over the throne in battle. So it's interesting to think about just what defines that exactly. But it seems to mean something.
It's a bit arbitrary.
Yes.
There was one more thing I was going to say about that. Oh, just about, this is a little off track, but Daenerys marrying, what's that guy's name? Do you guys know? I forgot.
Hizdar, like Zol'Lorak.
Hizdar. Yeah. I sort of feel like, wow, that's a big step, especially since Meereen is kind of supposed to be a stepping stone along the way to taking over Westeros, and that she should save marriage for an alliance that will help her with the bigger picture of uniting Westeros, don't you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think if she was staying there, it wouldn't be a big step, because I think that's kind of a common thing to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, seeing that she has bigger plans, or so we thought, it does seem a very strange thing to do.
Yeah, so not wanting to stray too far into this, because this is something I was going to bring up in book talk. This was one thing in the novel that made a lot more sense, I thought, than it did in the show. In the show, it just kind of came out of nowhere. You're like, what? And there wasn't a lot of background laid for why she might want to do that.
Yeah, there's kind of speeding
except
through
except to
things.
Make peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe one point where they're speeding through things, but it is getting pretty horrible there in Meereen. You know, what she's doing isn't working, so I guess try something new.
Totally.
But yeah, it was pretty rushed.
Okay, let's go to number three.
Okay, my number three was Jon's decision, which we've really talked a lot about. But Another thing, one more thing I wanted to mention that I thought was cool is that in that with Maester Aemon's speech, you know, the trust yourself, trust your intuition, you know, that really mirrors what was going on with Dany and Missandei. You know, she's advising Dany to, you know, trust the decision that she alone sees. And I just really like that parallel.
So Dany needs to kill the boy as well.
Dany needs to kill the boy as well. Kill the girl.
Kill the girl. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I like that too.
Agreed. My number three was a different King Stannis detail, a very small one, but I loved it when he corrected the grammar of a member of the Night's Watch who said, less enemies for us. And Stannis said, fewer.
Yes.
It just cracked me up.
I totally missed that.
That's what I'm going to put at the beginning of this episode, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And Davos said, what? And it was funny, but it was also a great insight into his character. I mean, this is just a guy that does not bend an inch from his standards, and he doesn't miss much. He's pretty pretty aware of what's going on around him. I also wanted to mention that this struck a chord with me because my mom, who is an English teacher, did this to me at my wedding when I was getting
married. Oh, my goodness.
How did you
Thanks,
feel?
Mom.
How did you feel about that?
I think I took it in stride, just like the Night's Watch.
Okay. My number three is kind of something, David, that you and I were talking about offline. It's a little concern. As you guys know, I haven't read the books, but, you know, it's known that this season is covering more of the books in less time. And they're skipping over some things and they're changing some things. I know that, you know, just vaguely. And so I wonder sometimes whether the decisions they're making, I get a little nervous, like that it might be a little hokey or even soft when they stray from Martin's text. For example, I learned that Jaime and Bronn didn't go on this mission together in the book. And so that makes me feel like, oh, well, it's like a buddy comedy. And I don't get me wrong. I love it. But I'm like, oh, is that just sort of playing to the audience a little bit? There was another one. I don't know if this is in the book or not, but this episode where Ramsay didn't discipline Theon, I actually thought that was kind of weak, even though I hate seeing him torture poor Theon. I thought, oh, why did you just let him get away with that, you know? I guess maybe if he set the whole thing up, like you guys said, then, that would be one reason to let him get away with it. But no, he still should have told the truth to Ramsay. I mean, I feel so twisted cause I'm taking Ramsay's point of view, but you know what I mean? Like if he's going to remain a credible, crazy threat, then he needs to be threatening.
He might be throwing him off by, being nice to him unexpectedly once in a
while. That's true too. Yeah, that's true. That's the way you train dogs. You do intermittent rewards. And then another one is this romance with Grey Worm and Missandei. And right before he said, you know, he's like, I was afraid. And she's like, afraid of death. No, I fear I never again see Missandei from the island of the North. I was sort of mockingly saying, I was afraid I was never going to see you again. And then he said it. And I was like, oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that's a little hokey. But I think I appreciated it in some part this episode just to get away from the tension a bit.
Yeah.
It was like a little break, but I do think that's a bit hokey.
I mean, I do too. Like, I appreciate all this stuff, actually, even the relief of having Ramsay not discipline Reek and all this stuff I'm complaining about. I actually kind of like it. But when I find out that some of it might not be in the book, I'm sort of like, oh, don't, you know, and another one I was going to bring up is this Walking Dead style telegraphing of Barristan's death that we talked about before. It's like, don't go too far off the path that this show has been on, you know, in earlier seasons, because this show is hard and it's unrelenting. And, you know, I don't want them to get too light with it, I guess. I like lightness in the show, but I don't want them to stray from Martin's work and play up to the fan base and turn it into something else. And so far, I'm loving it, but I guess I'm just, I don't know. I also like to put things in that are a little bit negative, so it's not all just rah, rah, rah.
I really agree with you, actually, and still love the show so far, but I'm a little scared. I think they're playing a dangerous game, because it's easy to make fun of George R. R. Martin. I mean, he took so long to write the last two books, and they got so long, right, and all this stuff. But the guy is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a genius, and he created this whole complex universe. And I think when you start to stray and start making up your own story, I hope it's just as good.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee. And they are starting to stray very far from the original. Much farther in this season than at any time before.
Do you know how much George R. R. Martin is in there collaborating with them? If at all?
Well, I mean, he outlined everything long ago for them. I mean, he outlined the entire situation in the entire ending.
But is he in there, like, giving his input at all along the way or not? He just gave him the outline and stepped back?
I don't know how much he's involved with that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It might be a good thing for us to
do a little research. Yeah.
Also, I wonder what his process is as he writes a book. Maybe it changes while he's writing it. Mm-hmm. Maybe he doesn't quite know where it's going.
Most people don't.
The end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or they think they know, and then it ends up going somewhere else.
Right. They let the characters speak to them.
All right. Where are we? I'm lost. I just went, so I guess it's you, Grace.
Okay. And my number two was Roos turning the tables on Ramsay. So I'm going to pull something up from my notes and just mention the North remembers. And I thought it was really cool to see these people popping in to let Sansa know that she is not alone and she does have people trying to watch out for her. And on that note, just Brienne still trying to make good on that oath, and she's still watching out for her, and she's trying to get a message to her. So, you know, I thought that's very interesting. And I like it because, as we've mentioned before, this is past the books for Sansa's story. So it's new for me. And so I find it intriguing to see what happens.
I love that woman, that older woman, says the North remembers and you have friends. But when she said, if you're ever in trouble, light a candle in the highest window of the broken tower, I kind of thought, that doesn't sound so convenient. Like, what if I'm...
And also, it brings up bad memories. That's like where Bran fell and was crippled.
Yeah, that was a good moment where she went and stared up at it, though.
Yeah, it was like, thanks a lot, serving woman. Could you come up with something less easy for me to do?
Exactly. And make sure it's a red candle, three red candles. Yeah.
And only on a really windy night.
Yeah, that's one thing that did cross my mind. A candle in a window, that doesn't seem like, I guess it could be a lantern.
But it was nice, definitely, that for her to come. I hope she doesn't turn out to be some kind of traitor, but I don't think she is.
She seemed like a kindly old woman.
Okay, David?
My number two is Valyria. And all the imagery that we saw there, the poem recited by Tyrion and Jorah, which was just haunting, and also provided a moment of commonality between them that brought out their shared background, even though they're not at that point working together.
And I even think like it was sort of like, oh, we're both the type of people to recite poems in a beautiful setting, you know?
Yeah, and appreciate the legend of this old place.
Yeah, because it gave a bit of history. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fate of Valyria is just fascinating. Mm-hmm. I almost wish they had spent more time on it, or just more time in that.
Right, place. And I don't even think they mention the word volcano, right? But maybe they say fires, but in case it's not clear to people, the Doom is just, I think it's like 14 volcanoes went off and basically destroyed everything. All the knowledge was lost. Most of the dragons were gone, the societies and all that.
Yes, a super volcano or a series of volcanoes, whatever. And that's plausible. I mean, that is one thing that could destroy an advanced, amazing society like that. Mm-hmm.
Pompeii.
Yep.
Okay. I thought it was interesting when Sam told Gilly that the Citadel is an old town and has the largest library, and that's where they trained the maesters. And mm-hmm. also, Maester Aemon was in this episode a bit, so I wanted to go find out a little more about the maesters. This stuff comes from the Game of Thrones wiki, which gets its information from places like HBO Online and DVD Extra. So it's all stuff that has to do with the show, not necessarily the books. But anyways, the Maesters, they have this kind of an order, and they go to the Citadel and train, and they're sometimes referred to as the Knights of the Mind. And they're all secular, they're all male, and they're teachers and educators, medical experts, advisors. They have to give up all their old family allegiances and their politics and just serve their lords. And they all wear a chain around their neck that has medals to signify their personal expertise. They forge each link themselves. Each link indicates a different field of study. And there's all different kinds of fields of study. And they're supposed to wear these things at all times. And some of the medals corresponding to fields of study are: silver is medicine and healing, gold is money and accounting, iron is warcraft, black iron is ravenry, lead is poisons, Valyrian steel is, quote, the higher mysteries, or like magic. But it said only one Maester in 100 possesses such a link, as study of the occult is frowned upon by the order. They're more science and logic versus crazy magic. And then there was steel, that's construction, and bronze, that's astronomy. So I just thought that was really interesting. I've heard, you know, I've seen these different Maesters, the Grand Maester, and not really thought about it. And I wanted to look into it a little bit.
Well, that's neat. I can tell you did this research recently, because a couple episodes you said, well, why is it that he's sending the Raven or whatever?
So, oh, that's
the Maester's job. Even though Qyburn's not really a Maester, they took away his.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that. But he's not a Maester though, right? He's just some mysterious.
But he was at one time.
Okay. Got it.
He's a fallen Maester. Mm-hmm. Plus, yes. Just the word ravenry is awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I want a degree in ravenry. Important.
That's the equivalent of IT in our modern society.
Yes. Yeah, totally. It's less romantic when you put it like that.
Okay, number one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, my number one is tension and suspense. And, you know, like I mentioned, this episode was slower paced than some, and it didn't have a ton of action outside the stone men. But there was just so much tension in this episode that it almost felt like a character in the story. You know, tension got all this face time in almost every scene. You know, we had the Danny and the family leaders with the dragon scene, which we haven't talked about yet. And Lord Commander Jon Snow in his talk with the men of the Night's Watch, and then Ollie and John. I thought that was just so full of tension and heartbreak, and, you know, so many others. You know, I just felt like every one of these scenes has me excited for what's to come. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought it was, for that reason alone, you know, that just made it such a great mid-season episode. Mm-hmm. Because I'm really looking forward to these last five episodes.
Stannis' army marching on Winterfell.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, all great stuff. Even though it was a slower episode, not a moment of relaxation at this point in the plot.
All right, David.
My number one is, or was, the dragons. I think it's been a while since we had some really great dragon moments, although they've showed up, you know, once in a while. So I really enjoyed seeing some dragon action of the dragon in the cellars, making a nice meal of the leader of one of Marine's great houses, who no doubt had it coming. And then when Tyrion sees Drogon flying over old Valyria, he's just awestruck, and it was a moment that was just magical.
Yeah.
We've seen foreshadowings of that in little previews for the show on HBO. And when that moment actually came up, it was, I thought, a really powerful.
It was very powerful for a lot of reasons. One of which was Tyrion just had no smart assness or anything of the sort left in that moment. Mm-hmm. It was just pure awe because it was a legendary creature that he probably thought was extinct. So,
long extinct and long gone. And here's a smart guy that knows history and it just blew him away.
Which is great to see the look on his face. And that could just come down and gobble him right up if it wanted to. And then on the other side, there's Jorah, who sees it as a symbol of his queen. And the dragon's gotten a lot bigger since then. So it's just sort of a sign of the time that's passed since he last saw her.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Okay, my number one, we've kind of talked all around about Valyria, but I just love that scene. We talked about how beautiful it was. I loved that there was the history in the poem. I love that it was quiet and mysterious and a beautiful old ruin, but also just so dangerous. Even before anything happened, you felt the presence of danger.
Yeah, because he was saying that the pirates don't even go in there.
Yeah, and I guess that's the point, right? That's why he took them through there.
Right. But if the pirates don't go there, you know there's something wrong, or you would think.
Exactly. I think it was a dumb mistake. But maybe that was his only choice. I mean, I was like, why would he go in there? But then, just as you said, he's, you know, Tyrion said, aren't you afraid of the doom? Jorah said, no, but the pirates are. So he's going to avoid the pirates. Sure.
Yeah, maybe the pirates are afraid of the stone men, which would be smart.
Would be smart. I just wanted to also make the point that the Targaryens were part of this Valyrian society. And because they had moved some of their people to the island of Dragonstone, which is in between the east and the west, as a trade outpost, basically, with Westeros, that's why they, after the Doom, were the only Valyrian high family left alive. And that's probably what drove them to go ahead and take their remaining dragons and invade Westeros and take over. So it all started back when this big incident happened. Okay, I think we're done. Do we have notes?
We went through one of my notes, except one really silly one.
Let's hear it.
But, and this might just be me, but this is like a Walking Dead reference, but I was totally getting a Dale vibe off of Tormund Giantsbane this episode. You guys got to go back and look. I think the actor who plays Tormund and Jeff Damon must be like long lost kin. If he has the whole eye thing. He doesn't have the eyebrows, but he has the whole eye thing and the nose flary thing. So you got to go look at that scene when he's talking to Jon Snow.
Sorry. I can see that. This look of like, I don't know, intensity, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
His eyes get real big.
Yeah, he's got an intense face, and that took some guts on the part of Jon Snow. Because Tormund Giantsbane, it looks like he could kill you standing there
in 2 seconds. Huge. And he's
kind of big.
Yeah, and he doesn't have probably a lot to lose at this point.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been horrible if he just uncuffed him and then he just like choked, popped his head off like a zit.
Or like the mountain did to the Viper.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh. One thing I wanted to mention is I've been waiting since this series started for Daenerys's story to intersect somehow with the rest of the show. So last episode, when Jorah met Tyrion, that happened and I was really happy. And also, though, just when you have to wait for something like that, it makes it even more sweeter when it finally does happen. But I just think that's really cool that it finally happened. I was afraid that maybe it would never happen.
And now they're stranded on some island somewhere.
I was just afraid that we'd be watching Daenerys' story for 7 seasons and then she would get killed and never cross the Narrow Sea, which she still might, but at least characters from the sides have met. A few great lines in this episode. Jon Snow says, "I'm not your enemy." And Tormund, that's his name, says, you sure seem like you were my enemy when you were killing my friends. I like that. Then what's her name? Miranda says to Ramsay, "Do you think she's pretty?" He says, "Of course I do. I'm not blind." I like that.
Yep.
One of my favorites, Tyrion to Mormont says, "A long sullen silences and an occasional punch in the face, the Mormont way." That was good. And then I liked when Jorah said, "No wine," to Tyrion. He kind of sneered.
It's when Tyrion said that to Jorah, sullen silences and an occasional punch in the face. One of the things that's fun about that is you get the idea there's quite a bit of history between those houses and the families. That wasn't just about maybe incident.
Totally didn't even consider that, but totally.
Something totally different. Who was it? Ramsey and Roose were talking when Ramsey was saying, "Now, so how did you get her pregnant?" You know, I mean, it looked like the actor who's playing Roose was like trying not to laugh at the beginning when he was doing that.
That's hilarious. Maybe it was ad-libbing.
And we remember that the reason she's his wife, right, was he was getting her weight in silver,
right,
or her weight in gold, or whatever it was.
You seem so sweet. Oh, I feel bad for being around
and young too.
Those people, yeah.
And I love that she's named Walda.
I know.
They all are. Walder or Walda.
And Waldina.
Yeah.
I thought when Jon Snow said to Ollie, "I know what it's like to lose the people you love," he said it in a very tender way, but you know he's referring to like his girlfriend that this kid killed.
Yeah, you killed my girlfriend.
I liked when Bolton told Ramsay the story of his mother, how she married the miller and he didn't approve. So he killed the miller and then raped her. And then she brought back the baby. And he says, "And I looked at you and saw then what I see now. You are my son." And after hearing that story, it's like, yep, you're definitely father and son.
Yes. Apple has not fallen too far from the tree.
Yeah. I think that's it. All right, good. Let's move on to listener responses.
Okay, Meg Mertz, "I have to say that I am enjoying the Sansa storyline more than I thought I would. The smile that she gave Ramsay after hearing about the child just made me laugh. She's playing the game better than I would have given her credit for. Also, I really liked the scenes between Tyrion and Jorah in the fight with the Stone Men. But the moment that he sees the dragon was one of the best from an action-packed show."
Christina Sowers says, "Nothing like a queen to go from threatening to barbecue someone to marrying them. I give this episode 4.45 crazed stone men."
It maybe was a little out of character for Daenerys to just torch a guy, don't you think?
I think she was just trying all these different things.
Yeah, and it wasn't dispassionate. I mean, she's pissed off because Ser Barristan got killed and Grey Worm got wounded and some serious measures.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Jacob Evans says, "Eerie to talk about the top window of the broken tower. That's where Bran fell in the pilot. Jon heading north would be bad news for his command authority. And why does Dany need to marry?" Yeah, if Jon heads north, did they bother to say who will lead in his place? They didn't really, right?
They did not.
I wonder if it's Sir Alistair.
I don't know, but it doesn't sound good. Okay, the next one. Pig Allen. "Ramsay is such a psycho. I honestly fear for Sansa. Whether she thinks it or not, she does need rescuing from that place. He's going to try to use Theon against her in some way, and it won't end well. And his psycho girlfriend will be right there to help."
I'm hoping the next episode is the Siege of Winterfell. But I don't think it will be.
No, I don't think so. We have other places to touch on first.
Yeah, that's right.
You know it's coming up sometime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Jana Lee Curtis says, "It's a nail-biter every time Ramsay shows up. He truly frightens me. Tyrion's awe at seeing the dragon gave me chills. I'm not sure how I feel about death by barbecue, sanctioned by Daenerys."
Evan Brookman says, "Man, I think being fed to dragons makes for a bad day. Is grayscale leprosy renamed?" Yeah, I think so. Fantasy leprosy.
Ned Rogers says, "I loved Brienne's scene with the old Winterfellian, although he seemed to be wearing one of those doofy Frey hats. What's up with that? That scene, coupled with Sansa's bedchamber scene, was so cool. All kinds of winter feels." "I liked the attack of the Stone Men, but I had hoped that they would do more with the makeup effects. Reading the book, I pictured them much less human, more misshapen and deformed, kind of like in The Last of Us. Love the dialogue between Ramsay and Roose. Such a charming pair of sociopaths."
Yeah, you get the feeling that's like their typical dinner talk.
Yeah.
Yes. "And then I flayed that guy and then hanged this other guy." Yeah.
Yeah, as far as the stone men go, I think if they were like all deformed and misshapen, I don't think they would be as imposing.
Yeah, I thought they were great, and I love the sounds they were making.
Yeah.
Kristen Hellberg says, really enjoyed the episode. Every little pocket had some grit to it this week. I held my breath when the stone men dropped down and almost took Tyrion.
Yeah, I got a little worried there for a second. Heather Lewis Sanders says, personally, I found it kind of hot when Stannis corrected Davos grammar. Hashtag swoon.
Heather Boehm Tallman says, I hope Ramsay suffers a painful, horrible death. No one better mess with Sansa. The North remembers.
North does remember. Laura Will Swink says, Roos and Ramsay Bolton. Doesn't surprise me to know that the apple does not fall far from the hanging tree.
And I well, Roos said. Just seems like kind of his demeanor is sort of just like a weary dad, but you know, an okay guy until he starts talking. And then he's fucked up. Okay, awesome.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in.
Let's move on to news about Game of Thrones.
We have several news items this week. First one being, your friendly podcasters are well aware of this, Game of Thrones will not break for Memorial Day weekend. Usually Game of Thrones takes a week off, but not this year. It will run straight through for all 10 episodes.
At least that's what one website is reporting. So we'll see, but that's what I read.
That would make me happy. We don't need a game without week of
that's right.
Without a week without Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Item: Maisie Williams, who plays Arya, will be in an upcoming episode of Doctor Who, apparently as a Zorro-like character.
She had a mask and a whip or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that means. Or carving A in everywhere. Or, I don't know.
With needle.
Yes. Game of Thrones breaks all-time TV piracy record. No comment.
Congratulations.
What an honor.
This week's episode was downloaded more than 2.2 million times worldwide in less than 12 hours. A new record.
I have HBO now.
So the pirates may be afraid of the Doom, but they are not afraid of HBO. From the Daily Beast, this is a great one. From the Daily Beast, Snoop Dogg talks Game of Thrones, the rapper on Bad Bitch Khaleesi and Smoking with Tyrion. Anyone who enjoyed True Blood probably knows the Snoop Dogg song, Oh Sookie. So if you just think of it in that context. So, Snoop Dogg, do you have a favorite character on the show? Snoop Dogg says, Tyrion, because he likes to have a good time and party with bad bitches. Who's the most badass character on the show? I say the Hound, because he just don't give a fuck. If you could be any Game of Thrones character, who would you be? Snoop Dogg says, I'd be my own character. Take over the Iron Throne. You hear me? Of all the Game of Thrones characters, who would you want to smoke weed with? Of course, Tyrion Lannister. He knows how to party. Was there an episode on the show that bugged you the most? When Littlefinger pushed Lysa down the moon door. That shit was crazy. I def did not see that coming. Littlefinger is cold. And finally, who's the sexiest character on the show? Hands down, Daenerys Targaryen. She's a bad bitch.
Oh, such a compliment.
He's so deep.
He has insight to burn.
He has a way with words.
And lastly, from hypable.com, Game of Thrones is underserving Dorne and Westeros' people of color. So I'm not going to read the whole article here, but the gist of it is that Dorne, taken from the novels, was a complicated and civilized, interesting place inhabited by people of color. And according to this writer, those characters in that place have been oversimplified and stereotyped and sort of turned into bloodthirsty, savage people who don't have the complexity that the rest of the people of Westeros does. And it's insulting to people of color, which is an interesting theory. And I would say maybe not completely without merit. That's just my
point. Right. Maybe we haven't quite seen enough yet to totally pass judgment, but I know from the article it said a couple of the changes have changed some characters who were for peace to be just kind of bloodthirsty.
Right, and particularly Ilaria Sam, who in the book argues eloquently for peace and does the exact opposite in the TV show.
Not quite,
She's arguing for revenge. And right. I'll read one of the examples. In last Sunday's introductory, this is two episodes ago, introductory scene of the Sand Snakes, the show has chosen to fall back on stereotypes that are not only insulting, but also just plain embarrassing to watch. 2 minutes of flashy, daring behavior and ridiculous monologues preaching vengeance were laugh out loud funny, a mockery of four grieving women. The terrible fake Spanish accents they're using are offensive, especially considering that none of the actresses are actually Hispanic. And the show is choosing to work off Hollywood's traditional insulting stereotype of the vengeful, spicy Spanish women. So you get the idea.
I do have to say, I think it's the weakest part of the show. And yes, we haven't seen much of it so far, but you know, I can't say I disagree.
Just to play a little counterpoint, I don't totally disagree either, but a couple of counterpoints is we've seen Dorian, is that how you say it?
Yep, the king? Dorian Martell.
He seems like a very measured, thoughtful person. So we've seen that. And also, as far as the accent and just the way their demeanor and everything, I get the feeling that they cast Oberyn and he came on and just knocked it out of the park. And so the rest of the society is sort of modeled on how he played that role, including his accent. So I don't know, that might at least speak for how they're talking. But yeah, if they've simplified it to make them more savage than they are in the books, then that's not cool. But maybe we'll see more shades of gray in upcoming episodes. I hope so.
Agreed.
All right, cool. Let's move on to Raven's Calls. We need to get some sound effects for our other segments. If you guys have any ideas. Okay, can I go first?
Please do.
Sure.
All right. This first one's from James. He says, caw-caw. He has more to say. He says, I've heard a vocal minority over the last few weeks complaining that this season is more boring than season 4, saying there's not enough happening, saying there's too much setup and not enough holy shit moments. My own viewpoint is that season 4 was only as intense as it was because of the 3 years of setup that preceded it. You don't get awesomeness without setup. I'm prepared for 2.5 seasons of setup in order to get an amazing conclusion to the series. I mean, I don't agree that this season is like taking a step back. I think it's been great so far. And he goes, moving on, the episode did a great job of showing how immense Winterfell is. Except for a few long shots in season 1, most of what we've seen of Winterfell has been inside or in the courtyard. The books take care to communicate the sheer size of Winterfell, and I'm glad this episode helped show that scale. Even from a distance, Winterfell looks huge and imposing. Yeah, it's important for it to look big because it's the center of the North.
Yeah, and it is a reminder. We see so much of the great houses interacting with each other and fighting with each other. You forget how big and powerful they are compared to the surrounding countryside and everybody in it.
Uh-huh. They're the most powerful.
Very true.
What I wonder about Winterfell is, I don't remember seeing the Starks there sitting down at dinner, but with the Boltons, it just looks so depressing. It's dark and dank, you know?
It is.
I think
I think it was like that. It's always been
the
like
only
that.
Big it dinner was scene was the dark. Very first episode, I think, when King Robert visited.
Somehow it seemed more lively.
Yes.
I think it was the inhabitants.
Yeah. He says, Sansa did not drink when the Boltons were toasting her coming wedding. Good girl. Ramsay would probably try to roofie you. I love Sansa's little smile when Ramsay heard about his father's bun in the oven. It was one part Littlefinger and one part spiteful 13-year-old girl. See, I didn't quite get that because I thought I saw a little smirk too. And I would think if I was Sansa, I might kind of hope that if she's going to have to endure being Ramsay's wife, that he'll at least be the Warden of the North. But maybe she's just hoping that Stannis will come in and take everybody out.
I do think Sansa's also noticed that And I'm not that I'm sticking up for the crazy Boltons, but unlike the Lannisters and King's Landing, the court in general, you don't have to stick to protocol too much with them. Yeah. They really do not care about that.
Which is, yeah, I found a little surprising, but it's true. You can mouth off and they'll just kind of laugh it off.
I mean, they're just very practical.
And then finally, he says, my first thought when we saw Drogon in the sky was, wow, he's really far from home. It's 1,000 miles from Valyria to Meereen. We should appreciate just how far that is. That's like seeing a dragon from Seattle while you're in L.A. Don't get bit by stone men, James from Portland.
Nice.
Thanks, James. Okay, this next one is from Olivia Deck. I was extremely uneasy during the Sansa and Miranda scenes in this episode. I'm still trying to figure out how much of a nutcase this girl is and what kind of danger she poses towards Sansa. If she's crazy enough to hunt down Tansy with Ramsay, what would she be willing to do to the woman that's preventing her from being with Ramsay? I'm hoping Sansa, being the key to the North, will keep her safe enough until the clusterfuck at Winterfell starts. Stannis the Manus is on the march with Winter at his back. I'm sure all the northern lords will attend this wedding and things will hit a boiling point with everyone being snowed in at Winterfell, resulting in chaos. The Boltons and Miranda are Sansa's biggest threats. Stannis wouldn't hurt Ned's daughter, especially when she could be used to rally the North. So who do you think poses the biggest threat, Ramsay or Miranda? I'd say Ramsay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Miranda could be a wild card for sure. But Ramsay certainly is in the position of power.
Yep.
This one's from Adi. Here are a couple general comments takes about the show. When multiple personality disorder meets faceless men, do they cancel each other out? Can you imagine how much simpler things would have turned out if paternity tests had been invented in the fantasy world era? That is a great point. If you had a little more to go on than hair color...
Would have thrown Jaime and Cersei for a loop there.
But then again, knowing how complicated the characters and situations are, they would probably manage to develop more drama anyway. And that was from Salt Lake City.
Yeah, we need a stone, a Maester stone for DNA testing.
Yeah.
This next one's from Drea Age. Drea, who says, good day, fellow Throners. Alas, much is revealed and much is left yet to be discovered. Haiku review for you. Dragons love rich snacks. Snow takes boats to save wildlings. Jorah gets little stoned. Well, another fantastic episode. Valyria, Land of Dragons, once the pinnacle of society and now lies in ruins. It was beautiful and heartbreaking. I wish we could get a glimpse of this broken city in all its former glory. What a perfect place for those Zed-like stoners to reside. Gotta say, they creep me out a little more than the White Walkers at this point. It's like the White Walkers are like slow zombies and these stone motherfuckers are like the terrifying fast zombies 28 days later style.
No doubt.
I'm more worried about the White Walkers for sure because they're organized they have a whole society and stuff.
Yeah. And these stone men are
keep to their little area. Mm-hmm.
They seem isolated, but
they're creepy though.
Very creepy. Mm-hmm, one interesting thing about this show that Drea brings up here is that unlike many of our favorite shows, this show, at least so far, does not do flashbacks.
I know.
So
huh?
We get to hear one. Yeah, that's true.
Cersei. But
generally, we get to... and even that was only a flashback to her childhood, but it wasn't to history. So we get to hear about a lot of history, but so far, at least, we haven't gotten to see it.
It would be so cool if they had unlimited budget and could whip these things up quickly and just show us, you know, the Mad King and the wars and all this stuff, little flashbacks of it.
There's got to be a couple spinoffs coming. Valyria, there's your first spinoff.
Totally. All right, that's it for Raven's Talk. I'll get out of here and we'll move on to Book Talk.
What was that?
Okay, welcome to Book Talk, and just as a reminder, this is spoiler-heavy territory, so if you are adverse to spoilers, skip on over to the next chapter. We have a couple of emails this week, so let's start off with those. Do you want to read the first one, David?
Here we go from Olivia Deck. Olivia says, hey, I wanted to write in and get your thoughts as fellow book readers. Well, you came to the right place, Olivia. I'm not feeling too well about Jon with Melisandre leaving the wall with Stannis. I'm a big believer in her using the Lord of Light power to give Jon the kiss of life and save him after the For the Watch stabbings in the book. Does this mean our 998th Lord Commander is really going to die in the show? My Grand Northern conspiracy heart can't take this option. Jon Stark needs to live, or will his resurrection come from being the prince that was promised, Azor Ahai reborn? Thoughts? What are your thoughts on that, Grace?
Well, you know, the first I thought of it is with Olivia's letter here. When Melisandre was on her horse and marching off, that didn't even cross my mind because, yes, we know he gets stabbed, and I've always assumed, oh, well, she's just going to resurrect him. But I didn't even think about the part that, yeah, she's leaving. Maybe he
there was a
stabbed.
Lot of lead up to this, and a lot of lead up to this in the novel, a lot of warnings from Melisandre about an enemy in the Night's Watch and all yes. that. Business, but this is a really great point, and it's funny that this takes the point of view from Olivia that she assumes he's going to be resurrected in the book and mm-hmm. maybe not in the show, and we don't really know that. But actually, I agree with Olivia. I shouldn't say this with George R. R. Martin, but you know, you thought that about Ned Stark when yeah. you first started, but he seems like a character central enough that. It would be hard to kill him off at this late date, but he has shocked us before.
So do you think they'll just skip the stabbing? I can't imagine that either, especially with the big deal that they made with him presenting the idea about bringing the free folk beyond the wall to the men of the Night's Watch and their reaction. I wouldn't think they'd skip it.
I don't
it.
Think they'll skip it entirely because they've spent too much time setting that up. I mean, even in this episode with the meeting and how divided the Night's Watch is. And so it may change form as a lot of other things have, but I'd be surprised if it's totally out.
Yeah.
Olivia, just finishing up Olivia's note, she says, overall, I'm enjoying the changes the show has been making when it comes to streamlining things. I'm not an Ironborn fan and I don't believe in Aegon. So I'm glad they're kicking those out to focus on other things. Thanks for all your hard work on the podcast. I enjoy listening every week. Well, thanks to you, Olivia. We're glad to have you on board.
I'm not totally convinced that they're not going to introduce Aegon at some time, maybe in a different
manner. I'm not either. And the order of everything going on in that part of the world has sort of been changed and different characters have been combined.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. We don't know where that story is going to go yet. And I was going to talk about a few other changes that have been made, but I'll wait until we go through the second letter here.
Okay. This last one is from Jacob Evans. I'm so glad they didn't leave us hanging with a drowning Tyrion. That was when I stopped giving a shit every time they made me think someone was dead. By that point, dying off page meant nothing because we had been faked out so many other times. It's a cheap shot and it would have been a bad choice on screen. The Stone Men made me think of The Walking Dead. Don't get touched by a living gargoyle, Podcastica. Feel like the episode was a little weaker than the last four, by the way.
Interesting and certainly a fair opinion, although it didn't sound like we felt that way.
Yeah.
So I mean, just in general, to pick up on this theme, which I think is almost the main theme of our book talk now, where the TV show was hewing very closely to the novels the first few seasons and pretty closely in the fourth season still with maybe some more details being changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have major storylines all of a sudden being changed and going all over the place. So here were a few that I noted. One is Jorah and Tyrion, which is a compression and consolidation of several threads that go on in A Dance with Dragons. They do come together and Jorah does kidnap Tyrion. It's much later, and it's all tied in with Aegon Targaryen, and then Tyrion gets involved with the Golden Company and the Second Sons, which could still happen later. That might be coming, but one wonders if it's still coming because Ser Barristan is involved in that storyline, and he's already dead. The grayscale in the novels strikes John Connington, which is a character it seems like we may never get to see. Which I don't know if that's a big deal, but it's a change. So lots of changes to that storyline. At Winterfell, there was a whole storyline going on with the Boltons trying to marry Ramsay Bolton off to the fake Sansa Stark, which turns out to be her childhood friend, Jane Poole. And in this case, we have the real Sansa Stark, which is a pretty big change.
Yeah. The one similarity is that Reek does give away Ramsay's bride in the novels. That was something that's
yes,
the same.
And I think it was done in the it looked like it was being done in the TV show more to humiliate Reek and humiliate Sansa, the real Sansa. Whereas in the novel, they were using Theon. They sort of reinstated him as Theon to try to give legitimacy to the fake marriage.
Right, right. And one thing back to the Tyrion and Jorah storyline, one difference that I did like is that in the books, we don't really ever get to see Valyria because no point of view character in the books actually sees it. So it's never described firsthand in the show. And so I thought it was pretty cool that we get to see it as Jorah and Tyrion are sailing through there, because in the show with the whole thing with the Stone Man, it was in a different part of the world. It wasn't there in Valyria.
Right, absolutely. And they really made some beautiful moments out of letting us see that. So I agree with you. That was a great choice. But we've talked some about how the Jon Snow story is being changed with him looks like going himself north of the wall. In the book, he entrusted that task to Val, who was the sister of Mance Rayder's wife, who had died, Vala. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Jaime and Bronn running around in Dorne. I'd say this is so far the change I like the least. Sort of as Jason put it, it's like they wanted to introduce a buddy movie in here, and it is kind of fun, but really the whole thing I think is a little implausible. And what Jaime was doing, by the way, was he was in the Riverlands negotiating the surrender of various houses that were former Stark allies, which is a lot less entertaining. So I can see why they might have wanted to change that, but it was more plausible.
And I can see I'm behind them really reusing characters that we know. I'm okay with that. And I don't really mind the whole Jaime and Bronn thing. I mean, I actually liked seeing them. I like seeing them together, but other parts, other things that they have changed in Dorne that we actually talked about in the regular part of the show, you know, I'm not liking as much, you know, with Ilaria. And I didn't remember that she gave a really nice speech on peace in the novels, but it just didn't seem right that she was there. She witnessed Oberyn and what happened to him and how he was killed. And so it just doesn't make sense to me, the direction they've taken her in the TV show.
No, and the whole story there was that the children were raped and murdered and all these terrible things happened to them. And then she's proposing the same for the child of the other family, which maybe it makes sense in a way, but it doesn't seem to fit with those people and that character.
Agreed.
I would have to say, and repeating a little bit of what I expressed last week, I don't mind some consolidation either. But I did think one of the amazing things about this show was its willingness to take on the complexity of these novels and deal with it and not change too much. So I'm a little worried at the rate at which the story is moving and things are being consolidated. It's still really entertaining, but I think maybe we're going to lose a little richness. And I feel like the formula they've decided to use they've gone through the last two long novels, which are 2,300 pages together, and sort of pulled out all the events they find compelling. And then they're just reassigning a lot of those events to a smaller group of central characters.
Sure. And I do think it's necessary in a large part. I'm not worried except for the Dorne storyline. That's the only thing I'm really a little bit worried about. And, you know, I'll see how that plays out. I'm not prejudging or anything.
One thing I wanted to explain a little bit more about was Hisdar Zolorak, because we didn't get a lot of background on that in the TV show. So just a reminder to everyone, that read the books, what happened there is that as things kept getting worse and worse for her in Marine and for her hold on Marine, Hisdar in the books is a more powerful, sort of sleazier character who mm-hmm. really seems like a leader in that city, not only of one of the great houses, but maybe of the whole resistance. He's sort of playing both sides. It's never quite clear whether he's working for or against her.
But I mean, I really think it was strongly implied that he was involved with organizing all that, the killings with the Sons of the Harpy and all those attacks.
True. But in the novel, he spends a lot of time setting himself up as a match for Daenerys and actually asking for her hand in marriage.
Proposing.
Yes, yeah. Many times. So by the time it actually gets to be an engagement, you get the sense that she's sort of worn down by him and that by everything that's going wrong in the city. It's an interesting change that they made in the TV show, that it's more of a powerful move by her, a strategy that she chooses exactly. rather than having it sort of imposed upon her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as far as the fighting pits, I mean, that was kind of part of the deal. And actually, I don't even think it happened until after they were married. But, you know, it was kind of a condition, I think, or maybe even the whole marriage was in condition. If he could keep it, the peace for, was, a, what was it, like 90 days or something like that, she would marry him and then, you know, open the arenas.
Yep, you're right. It was a quid pro quo. And he's able to tamp down the violence and the resistance in the city. And so she goes through with it.
Yep.
But I have to say, looking back at the novels to, you know, to compare, it's getting me excited for that next novel to come out. Really can't wait. And even if we've zoomed ahead in the show and we know some of what's going to happen or we don't, it's just a reminder how great these books are and how exciting they are to read.
Definitely. No doubt. Okay. Well, do you have anything else to cover? Of course, there's tons of other little small things, but these were the big things that we wanted to touch on.
Agreed.
Okay. Let's get Jason back in here.
Okay, so that's it for Book Talk. We now resume our regularly scheduled podcast.
Long, sullen silences and an occasional punch in the face.
Okay, we're back. Thanks, you guys. And now it's time for next week on Game of Thrones. So next week is Season 5, Episode 6, Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken. Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken. Which is directed by Jeremy Podeswa and written by Brian Cogman, who has written 10 other episodes of Game of Thrones, including this week's ep, Kill the Boy. It says, Arya trains, Jorah and Tyrion run into slavers, Trystane and Myrcella make plans, Jaime and Bronn reach their destination, that's cool, and the Sand Snakes attack.
Hmm. So we're back at Dorne.
Who's Trystane?
He is the one that, he's Doran's son, the one that Myrcella is promised to.
Oh, okay. So we
he's a Martell. Yeah. And those yes. words are the words of House Martell, correct?
Unbowed and Brent and Broken?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, that's their slogan.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're going to be spending some time in Dorne next
cool.
week.
Cool. But we get to see a little Arya, which I'm excited about too.
Yes.
I love that whole faceless men thing. All right, that's our show, episode 9. Thank you for listening, everybody. Before we ended, I was just curious, is there anything else you guys are particularly liking lately? Not Maggie, but anything?
I have not had time for anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, you're... You got your kids doing all kinds of stuff, huh?
I would have liked Ex Machina if I got to see it yesterday. Just kidding.
I'm really loving Mad Men. It's wrapping up. There's one more episode, and I feel like it's going to be a strong finish because I really enjoyed the last few. What about you, David?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. There was one episode, maybe two or three episodes ago, we thought was weak.
Yeah,
but then they came back with two really,
really strong, ones.
Really strong ones, yeah. And it's coming to an end, but it's quite compelling.
There have been some moments in these last couple episodes where I just felt really choked up. So good job.
Yep, really good.
All right. If you want to call us, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY. And I just found out that this whole time our message has said the Google subscriber you have called is not available. So not so welcoming, but maybe that put a few of you off. We will have that change soon.
It was in the spirit of Joffrey.
Yeah, that's true.
You can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check out our website at gameofmicrophones.com.
We're also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica.
And be sure to check out the other first-class podcasts in our network at podcastica.com.
Next week, Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 6, Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken, with hosts Jason, Karen, and Mr. Blog. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Never touch scaly men.
Don't let them touch you!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.